This is HPR episode 2420 entitled, Netbooks, Keeping an Old Friend Alive. It is hosted by Beza and is about 16 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, why netbooks are not necessarily obsolete, and how to keep them performing well.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, this is Beza again. I've decided to talk about netbooks, and I'm calling this talk Keeping an Old Friend Alive. It's tempting to say that the netbook as a class of computer is all but dead. Now, you know, whether it was killed off by the tablet or the smartphone is open to debate. But once they hit the market, people quickly stop buying netbooks. My missus has got an iPad, and I borrowed it on a few occasions when I've been travelling and a bit shorter luggage space. Now, I can't deny its slim size makes it convenient from that point of view, but I find it frustrating to use. I mean, a touch screen can't compete with a keyboard and a mouse for productivity if you're trying to do some real work. Now, I'm a touch typist, so even with the confined dimensions of a netbook keyboard, I can still create documents at a fairly rapid pace. The on-screen keyboard of a tablet can't be used for touch typing, so not only is creating text much slower, it also damages your eyesight as you inevitably end up maintaining a fixed focus on the screen for long periods. Yes, you can get Bluetooth keyboards for iPads, but that's not only a potent symbol of their shortcomings, it also rubs salt into the wound when on top of the excessive price of an iPad, you've got to spend more money to make it into a practical business tool. I had a smartphone for a while, but I soon gave that up as a bad job, because just having to charge it up every single day was a pain in the backside. But every time I installed an app, I was reminded of the intrusion these devices make into your privacy. I mean, why does an app to help me brush up my German vocabulary need access to my photos and my contacts? I mean, I now use a Nokia feature phone. It does everything I need, and it regularly goes for 10 or 12 days at a time between charges, and even then the battery doesn't run flat. You do still sometimes see small laptops for sale with screens of about 11.5 inches, but the original netbook format with a 10-inch screen is a thing of the past. Be that as it may, I know plenty of people who still have one tucked away in a drawer, kept as a standby machine, or like mine, used on more or less a daily basis. A few years ago, I bought a netbook to use as an audio player. Up until then, my music collection had been stored mainly on audio CDs, but that was beginning to cause problems as their storage expanded from 3 shelves to 4, 4 shelves to 5 and beyond. I looked around for a hard disk-based player that could store all my music and integrate my hi-fi system. Apple bought out an iPod with a capacity of 160 gigabytes, which should have been plenty. But that still had two big problems. First was the price, which at over £300 was more than I was prepared to spend. And secondly, it was an Apple, so that meant whatever it did cost, by definition, was a lot more than it was worth. The great thing about netbooks was that they generally came with a surprisingly good sound card, which could pump out high-quality audio through the headphone socket. Combining that with a decent amount of disk space and a fair price, I had the solution to my requirement. I settled on an Acer Aspire 1 netbook for about £180, which came with an AMD chip, 1 gig of RAM and a 160 gig hard disk. I've seen friends buy these Sonos systems and struggle to understand why. With the possible exception of being able to use your smartphone as a controller, all the functionality of a Sonos can be provided by the cheapest laptop for a lot less money. My netbook came with Windows 7 Starter Edition pre-installed. Now that was never going to last long, so in fact I removed it the day after I bought the netbook. I installed Ubuntu on it, and it all seemed to work fine. However, after a day or so, I noticed that even with an audio cable plugged into the headphone socket, there was still sound coming out of the netbook's built-in speakers. I fired up the mixer control and explicitly disabled those speakers, but it didn't make any difference. It definitely hadn't been a problem in the shop when the netbook was still running Windows 7, so I knew it wasn't a fault with the hardware. It had to be an issue with the Linux kernel. There didn't seem to be any point in replacing Ubuntu with another Debian derivative, as it might well have a similar kernel, so I decided to look further afield. I tried Fedora, SUSE and Mandriva, but SUSE wouldn't install at all, and the other two, the Wi-Fi wouldn't work. The answer turned out to be PC Linux OS, which booted up nice and quickly, and both the Wi-Fi and the audio worked perfectly. I never had any problems with PC Linux OS, but I only ever really considered it to be an interim solution, for no other reason than prejudice. I've always instinctively felt happier with distros having their roots in Debian. It really is as simple and illogical as that. After a few months, the next crop of Ubuntu releases came out, complete with an updated kernel, so I tried running Zubuntu on the netbook in live mode, and everything worked perfectly this time. Somewhat unfairly, I know, that was the end of PC Linux OS for me. That was all about 5 years ago. Since then, I've tried a different distro, perhaps every 6 months or so, and the one issue that's been more or less consistent is that each seems to be a little slower than the one it replaces. To be fair, most mainstream distros even now can still be run on most netbooks. UEFI and Secure Boot run likely to be an issue on the older hardware, which makes the installation very simple. The problem is that as distro has evolved to take advantage of ever faster processors and ever more RAM, their optimum host profile is getting further and further away from the typical netbook. The result is that a netbook that used to run fairly briskly is now probably slow to boot up, and its applications similarly open at a more leisurely pace than they used to do. Something I've come to recognise is that there is a difference between the performance you perceive and the actual performance revealed by a stopwatch. For example, if your distro boots to a desktop in 20 seconds, say, but it's another 20 before you can actually do anything with it, you'll still perceive it as being faster than the distro that scrolls boot up text for 40 seconds and is then ready to go. When your computer has a slow processor and not a lot of RAM, the difference in performance between two distros will inevitably be more pronounced than on a more powerful machine. I've run standard Ubuntu, Zubuntu, Mint Cinnamon, Mint Mate, Debian, LMD and Point Linux on my primary laptop and found little practical difference between them where performance is concerned, but on the netbook, the difference is often enough to rule one distro out and another distro in. A big resource thing is, of course, the desktop environment. It eats precious memory in the netbook and it saps the CPU. Purely as an experiment, I spent an interesting afternoon once building a minimalist OS without a desktop environment at all. Starting with Ubuntu server, I added just the components I needed to provide audio and video support, and then installed a command line audio player and a command line video player. Now MOC, M-O-C, is a text mode audio player that, to my great surprise, provides all the basic functions you'd expect from an equivalent audio player with a GUI. And that includes having an equalizer and it supports custom playlists. It looks like you're back in the early 90s and running DOS, but it gets the job done and it fires up near as damn it instantly. Then there's a video player called Melt, and that does pretty much the same thing with video. I wouldn't choose to run the netbook entirely in text mode, obviously, but used that way, its relative lack of resources simply ceases to be an issue. And it's good to know that no matter what happens to mainstream Linux distros in terms of system requirements, as long as the netbook still works, there'll always be a way of using it as a media player. As I said, it was only an experiment, after which I went back to a conventional desktop distro. This time it was Linux Mint XFCE. While it was slow in comparison, it did run nicely and the user interface looked good, so I had no particular plans to change from that. However, it was not long after I'd installed Mint that I came across Tony Hughes' HPR episode about his experience running Raspbian in x86. That inspired me to try it out for myself. And from personal experience, I already knew that Raspbian runs well in a low-resource environment, you know, like on the Pi 2 and the Pi 3, so I was intrigued about how well it would run on an Intel processor. Now, Raspbian x86 is not just a recompilation of its ARM equivalent, but then it's also not just Debian with the Pixel desktop added. Visually, Pixel certainly looks the same as on a Raspberry Pi, but you don't get all the same packages you get on the Pi. Also, the Raspi config utility, which is so very useful on the Pi, is a lot less extensive on the x86, and that's a bit of a shame. Now, I agree with everything Tony said about the shortcomings of the default security model. Not requiring a password to run things as root on any network-enabled device is a bad idea, in fact, a very bad idea. While I do understand the goal of keeping things as simple as possible for novice Pi users, I think that simplicity should not come at the expense of basic security. Requiring the user to set an admin password on first boot would actually be beneficial because it introduces the concepts of security right from the word go instead of leaving it as an optional extra. From my first boot of Raspbian 86, I could tell it was the fastest out-of-the-box distribution I'd run on my netbook for quite some time. It was a very promising start. As well as making a password compulsory for admin activities, I created a new admin user profile and deleted the default. If you continue to use the widely known default profile, which is created on the installation, well, that's a layer of your security that's been removed straight away to the advantage of an SSH attacker. While the performance of the Pixel desktop is very welcome breath of fresh air, I can't really say that its appearance does it any favours. It just doesn't look like a professional user interface, even though it works fine. And somehow you couldn't imagine using it to write a thesis on nuclear physics or to manage a corporate takeover. But fortunately, while you can never turn it into anything as sophisticated as Martel Cinnamon, you do have some limited control over colours and fonts, and you can reposition the taskbar to the bottom of the screen if that's what you prefer. But there's only one icon theme. You can install others using Synaptic Package Manager, but I've not found any way to make them active using the supplied tools. I tried Dconf Editor, but it had no effect. In the end, I got round the problem by using a cheat. I just renamed the icon folders so that the GNOME Human theme was identified as the default PIX, P-I-X, theme. That considerably improved the appearance of user interface. Another change I made was to install the Caja File Manager to use as an alternative to the default PCBAN FM. Now, Caja is the excellent file manager that comes with the Mate desktop. I was surprised how few dependencies had to be installed alongside Bisynaptic to get it running. The Caja was originally based on Nautilus, which is the standard GNOME file manager, but Nautilus has since been badly messed about with to the extent that I think I'd find it more or less unusable. There's nothing wrong with PCBAN FM as such, but if you have the option of using Caja instead, I think you'd be daft not to. The final change I've made is to install Clementine as the audio player. The Debian repositories on which Raspbian is based do not include a Spotify client, so I needed an audio player which could connect to my Spotify account, and Clementine fits that bill. I've only encountered one real problem with Raspbian x86, and that involves the HDMI output. In terms of video, it works fine. You just plug the cable in and boot up. The display comes up on your TV or monitor, sized correctly without having to adjust any settings. The only trouble is there's no sound. The mixer gives the option of sending the audio through the HDMI output, but it has no effect. You can still direct the audio to local speakers or to the headphone socket, so that provides a viable workaround in my circumstances, as my TV could take a separate audio input. It might not suit everybody though, but I'm not saying there's no other solution, but having found one that works for me, I've not bothered to look any further. In conclusion, I would recommend that Raspbian 86 to any netbook user who is finding their current Linux distro a bit on the slow side. I think it's entirely possible that even the HDMI audio will work out the box in other machines. Mine is slightly unusual in having an AMD chip instead of the Intel. Plus, of course, not all netbooks even have an HDMI output anyway. I would highly recommend, though, that you make those simple configuration changes to ensure that admin actions always require a password, and even better, don't use a default user profile at all once your initial setup is complete. A lot of netbooks, sitting almost forgotten in drawers or at the back of a cupboard, may have fallen by the wayside because they're deemed to be too small to be practical. Well, you can buy a USB keyboard for next to nothing to get around the input problems. And if you've got an old monitor, you can also get around the display size shortcomings. Regardless of whether your netbook runs Linux or Windows, connect the keyboard and monitor and set the power manager so that it carries on working with the lid closed instead of going into hibernation. Suddenly you have a compact desktop computer. You only press a power user, but it's more than adequate for somebody who just wants to send emails or type a few letters. If you have no use for it yourself, your old netbook could get a second life in the hands of somebody whose finances perhaps wouldn't stretch to buying a computer at all. When my netbook inevitably comes to the end of its life, I've every intention of replacing it with another small format laptop of some kind to continue to meet my media player requirements. I can't imagine using any other kind of device now. A Raspberry Pi 3 would actually make a perfectly adequate media player, but it would involve just too many peripherals and trailing cables to create the practical system. Tablets don't have anything like the necessary storage, and a touch interface is just not efficient for selecting dozens or even hundreds of tracks quickly to add to a playlist. A mouse and a keyboard are a far better option. Well, to end, I hope I've convinced at least one person that while netbooks may be outdated, they're not necessarily obsolete or redundant. If you got one but it runs Windows, I can well imagine why you probably gave up using it. However, replacing Windows with almost any Linux distro will breathe life back into it, and Raspbian 86 in particular could well be the key to getting a year or two more service out of your old friend, possibly to the benefit of somebody in your local community. This is Beezer in Shropshire, England, saying bye for now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.